Welcome all to the 31st episode of The Real Spotlight. In this podcast, I, your host Tony, will talk or shine a spotlight on a variety of topics, whether it's new movie releases, beloved classics, or hidden gems. Today's topic, the 96th Annual Academy Awards. Joining me all the way from Brisbane, Australia, is one of the busiest cinephiles I've met on Instagram. Not only does he run an IG account, Netflix Fix, he does celebrity interviews where you can watch on NovaStream. And he hosts not one, not two, but three podcasts. They're called The Book Was Better, Monthly Movie Marathon, and The One Inch Barrier. Let's welcome to The Real Spotlight, Nick Libero.
Hey, man. Tony, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me on, man. I appreciate it. This is exciting. I know it's been a long time in the waiting, but I'm excited to finally be on and talking Oscars of all things, right? This is the big episode.
Yeah, I thought when I wanted to do this episode, I said, I need somebody who's watched every single movie. And I know you're the first person that came up. I go, Nick has probably seen every single short, every single animated, every foreign film. I go, let me ask him. You said yes. And thank you.
I've seen a couple, but I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about it with you, man. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Let me get this question out of the way. With your active IG, celebrity interviews, and three podcasts, when do you find time to sleep?
It's normally the first thing to go, unfortunately. But no, I've been doing this, pardon me, for a while now. Like, I started writing reviews in 2015, so I've had like the writing aspect down of it for a little while. I've been doing IG since 2019 with the video reviews, and I think it's just one of those things where I love this so much. I like many of us, like you, like so many people in this community, we love what we do and we love movies and we love talking about movies. So I think that just fuels me and I find time to do it. We were talking a little bit off mic, I guess, that this year's sort of the year where we're both trying to find a bit more of a balance with it. Yeah. And do, you know, make sure we're spending time with people we care about and watching the things we want to watch, not just for the sake of reviewing stuff. So that's the new learning balance for me this year, but I find the time because I really love what I'm doing. But in complete fairness, sometimes sleep is the first thing to go. And I know this is an audio podcast, but this is about my second cup of coffee and it's 9:45 in the morning where I'm at. So
that's okay. I'm having one as well. And it's,
yeah, it helps. It helps.
4:45 here. thank you for coming on. And you are actually the second co-host of the One Inch Barrier podcast to be a guest on the Real Spotlight. I've had Kieran on, and yes, he was on to chat about Nolan and Oppenheimer. So that was a good time.
And there we go. And I guess there's a link there today as well, with this Oppenheimer Oscar run. But no, I've obviously listened to a few episodes of your show before, but I've listened to the Kieran episode obviously as well. And that was sort of just after we'd started that One Inch Barrier, which was Kieran's really first sort of run into podcasting. So, but he's come into his own, man. That is such a fun show we do. It's all about international cinema. And I've been lucky to know Kieran for years before it. So he's awesome, man.
Yeah, he's a pro now. And it's funny that I wanted to toot my own horn here, because in that particular podcast about Oppenheimer, I did predict they would get 13 Oscar nominations. So
there we go.
Kieran's like, wow, that's a lot, but I wouldn't be surprised. So we kind of both agreed. So speaking of him, he actually sent you a question.
Here's my
surprise question. And this must be some kind of insider joke here, because he says, okay, does Nick think Warhorse was snubbed?
Okay. Quick context. And we actually, if you want the full context, when we did our 1 year anniversary Q&A episode for that One Inch Barrier, we dived into this topic a fair bit. I have never seen Warhorse. Which is I'm not going to call a Steven Spielberg classic, but it's a Steven Spielberg film, but I've never seen it. And I have a friend of mine who does not think I have validity as a film critic because I haven't seen War Horse. He's like, if you're going to analyze movies, you've got to see them all. And War Horse is one. And it's been honestly now about a 15 year back and forth of, I'm stubbornly never going to watch War Horse just to tick this guy off. So if Kieran's talking about the 96th Annual Academy Awards, I don't think War Horse was snubbed. And in the year it came out, I have no comment. So
yeah, I think the Spielberg one was it, what, 2011, 2012 ish?
I think it was, that sounds about right. Yeah. So,
and for me, actually, I'll admit as well, I just saw this movie a few years ago, and I'm one of the biggest fans of Spielberg. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and I loved every, I mean, his movies were like my life. I don't want to sound too dramatic there, but yeah, it's one of those movies that passed and it was made, and I go, I didn't even realize it was his movie. And I watched it and I go, okay, I liked it. But I actually did a ranking of all his movies. I ranked it 28 out of 34.
Right. It just doesn't have that Spielberg magic to it, right? It's
But yeah. Let me start. You said you started your account in 2019. How did that evolve to doing celebrity interviews?
So 2019 is when I started the NixFlixFix Instagram account, and that was all just 60-second videos and reviews about films. And I kind of somehow stumbled into the press side of things because I was entering competitions to go to preview screenings of films. And for those who don't know, media normally get access a couple of days beforehand when a movie comes out for review purposes. But sometimes they invite people of the public, members of the public, for word of mouth. So I was entering competitions for that, and I sort of stumbled into it, and I was meeting people who were already established reviewers in Brisbane, like my good friend Peter Gray, who was a big part of sort of opening the door for me getting my foot in the door with that. So I started contacting distributors and getting, you know, the opportunity to be invited to these screenings, like not having to do competitions to get to them. And that led to an opportunity with NovaStream, which is a company here in Australia, a pop culture website based out of Melbourne. And Alistair is the editor-in-chief there, and I got talking to him, and he's like, if you'd like to come write for us. And I was like, oh, that'd be amazing. Like, I hadn't done written reviews for a while. So I just slowly started on ramping for that. Then COVID happened, and Australia, like many places, sort of went into lockdown. But Brisbane and Queensland were one of the first to sort of come out of the initial lockdown. So our cinemas reopened first, and we had movies, like new movies coming out in the cinema. So I was hammering out reviews for NovaStream, and the distributors and the PR companies took notice of it. So then by the time things were starting to get a little bit as normal as they could have been post-COVID, Mortal Kombat was coming out. And the actress who plays Melina in that, Cece Stringer, was from Brisbane. So they were doing a localized press tour for her.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, do you want to come and have a chat with her? And I was like, oh, absolutely. Like, that's awesome. I've never done a professional junket or interview before. Spoke to her. It went well. The article did really well. And it just sort of snowballed from there, I guess. So 2021 was a bit slow. 2022 was building up. And then last year, I did about 60, I think it was 62 interviews with heaps of different people, actors, directors, producers, production designers. Like, there's just a whole array of people. So I, in all fairness, sort of stumbled into it. And then once I realized this is awesome, I kind of actively pursued it. Yeah. And the last 2 years have been insane for that. Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of got on the train and go, let's see where this takes me. And now you're full steam ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. Hopefully there's no signs of slowing down. So it is a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun.
So going back to your first junket, how nervous were you, or were you nervous at all?
No, I definitely was nervous. And the funny thing is I still get nervous to this day. Whether it's in person or virtual, I still, the first few minutes leading up to an interview, I kind of look at my smartwatch and like the heart rate's gone up like an extra 20 beats. It's like that adrenaline starts kicking in, because you don't want to mess it up, and you want it to be good. But the one thing I've learned over the last 2 or 3 years of doing it is that whoever you're talking to, no matter how prestigious they are, they're a person too. And ultimately at the end of the day, they're trying to sell their film. There are obviously some famous interviews where obviously the talent does not care about the fact they're selling a film. They just don't want to, you know, do an interview. But if you just come at it like, you know, two people having a conversation, and you have a few questions pre-prepared and you don't come across too rehearsed, it just feels like what we're doing now, like just a casual conversation.
Yeah.
But those nerves still hit. Like, first day with CC Stringer, I was, and especially because it was in person, they're the ones you don't want to mess up.
Yeah.
Because you're in the room with them. It's really awkward. You can kind of blame technical difficulties when you're on Zoom. You can be like, oh, sorry, what did you say? I had an interview with Jason Blum of Blumhouse Productions where the phone line cut out halfway through one of his answers. And then I said, I'm so sorry. Like, it cut out a little bit, but I'll continue on for sake of time. And I asked the next question and he went, I just answered that. But that was in the part where it had cut out and I hadn't heard it. And like my heart dropped to my stomach. And I was like, oh my God, I pissed off Jason Blum. I'm never going to talk to anyone ever again. But we talked through the situation. He was completely fine about it after that. I don't want this to come out and be like, Jason Blum's a dick, but he's very nice. He was very lovely about it. But it's, you know, having moments like that had to me, have gone like, those things can happen. It's out of your control and that's okay. But there's still sometimes nerves, man. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I always think it's such a difficult thing to do because when you think about it, all those celebrities have probably done countless and countless of interviews that day. And then you're thinking like, oh my God, I'm probably the 50th person asking a similar question. I need to figure out how to ask unique ones. That way they're not like, well, what do you think about the knee? What do you think? They probably heard the same thing over and over again. And you can see some of their faces and kind of like, you know, I just saw a TikTok with Larry David. He's doing a press thing for the last season. And he goes, okay, so what are you going to ask me that the 50 other reporters that didn't ask me? And then she asked the question. He goes, what did I just tell you? You asked me the same thing they just, but he's just messing around with her. He wasn't trying to be, like you said, a dick. But yeah, I always thought that was, it reminds me of the movie Notting Hill with Hugh Grant.
Right. No, exactly. That is one of the most accurate representations of any for like the junket scenario, which in itself is a weird environment. Like, it's literally, you're just trying to be best friends with someone for like 5 minutes. At a time. It is such a weird environment. And then, like you said, there are 50 other people who have done it.
Is it 5 minutes or like three to five minutes?
It can change. Yeah. It's generally anywhere between four. If you're doing what they call a TV slot, which we get a couple for Novastream, even though we're print, it's usually 4 to 6 minutes. And then if you're doing a print slot, it can be 8 to 15 minutes, they're the ones I love because you get to sort of ease into it a bit more. But those 4 to 6 minute ones are those rapid fire.
Is it the same amount? Questions. Is it the same amount of time if you have more than one?
No, I've done 4 minute interviews with two people before. That's tough. It's tough. Yeah. So you got to ask broad questions. Yeah. They can both answer. Yeah.
So I won't put you on the spot and ask who was the best. I'll just ask you who was the worst. No, I'm just kidding. okay. Which one do you think was the most fun? How about that?
Ooh, the most fun I've had. I did have a lot of fun with Lily Sullivan and Alyssa Sutherland, who were the lead stars of Evil Dead Rise. That was really fun. I think as well, they're Australian, and it was actually in Australia. They were in Australia for that part of the junket. And that was a lot of fun. It was just a lot of energy matched, and they gave insightful answers, but there were some really funny answers too about sort of their reactions to certain things in the script. That energy was incredibly high. And I think just for another answer as well, I got to talk to Joel Crawford, who is the director of Puss in Boots: The Last Wish.
Okay.
And he was he's awesome. In fairness, I'll say a lot of the team from DreamWorks, I've been able to cover a lot of DreamWorks stuff. They're some of the coolest people I've ever spoken to because they're not discrediting anyone else who works in animation, but these guys seem to really care about what they do. And you can kind of tell that there's like no BS to a lot of what they say. And they're not scared to break things down or make sort of in a classic DreamWorks fashion, like their films, sort of like more adult jokes. Like I've had interviews with them where they're dropping F-bombs and saying, I've got an interview coming out for Kung Fu Panda 4 soon, where we pitched a Kung Fu Panda 5 sequel that involved Po smoking and strangling people and stuff. Like it's ridiculous, right? But it's a lot of fun. So Joel Crawford as well for Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. He was awesome. That was a lot of fun too.
How about last question about interviews? How about the most intimidating one that you're like, oh my God, I don't want to fuck up here?
Oh man. So the Jason Blum one was a big one because that was early for me. That was like my third or fourth interview. And I was like, this guy doesn't suffer fools. Like I'd watched interviews with him, but it went really well. the one that I was most intimidated to go into was Michael Bay for Ambulance. Yeah. And mainly because the most famous interview or thing with him is normally him getting upset at red carpets and not wanting to talk and not giving long answers.
Yeah.
So I'd prepared to go into that, but I sort of opened up that interview by being like, and I genuinely meant it. Me and my brother, who's about 2 years younger than me, we grew up on Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2. Like, we love those movies. As flawed as they are, we were big fans of them when we were teenagers. So I brought that up and I said, like, I genuinely mean this, Michael. I called him Mr. Bay at first and he said, no, you have to call me Michael. And I went, okay, cool, that's fine. Mr. Michael, sir. And he was like, just Michael. He said, or Bay. You can call me Bay as well. I was like, you're a guy who like, no, you like, you want people to think you're cool. And he is.
The thing is, because now, you know, after the interview, you could tell your friends, you know, I talked to Bay earlier.
Yeah, that's it. That's just dropping that name, right? Yeah, just me and my friend Bay. But yeah, and that was intimidating to go into. But once that first sort of ice was broken and he was even like, yeah, you're like, you look like the age of someone who like could quote Bad Boys 2 back to front. I was like, I probably could. I was like, we don't have time for that, but we could. Yeah. And that led to being one of my favorite interviews. So yeah, that was intimidating to go into.
Oh, cool. Actually, before we start our main topic, any thoughts or hot takes about Dune Part 2? Because it's been a lot of controversy with people kind of being hyperbolic about it. Some people pissed off.
Yeah.
And what's your take? I saw your review, but just for the people who don't.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I am very open about how I felt about Dune Part 1 as well. It actually took me a couple of goes to really sort of feel like I connected to the story emotionally. I guess that's not what I'm trying to say. I sort of just understand what was going on. And I'm also very much an open book about how much I dislike part ones. I get frustrated when something builds up to sort of nothing and then we have to wait, but that's just me being impatient. So it took a couple of goes for Dune Part 1 to really sink in for me. And then I was concerned the same was going to happen with Dune Part 2, sort of knowing that there could be more of this story to adapt and tell. But it got me the first go, like the first time around. I've only seen it the once, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a solid, really solid epic film. I liked the idea of space religion and space politics colliding. Like, it's not anything new in film, but I like the way it's presented here. My hottest take would be that I thought Austin Butler was fine. I think he doesn't do enough to really warrant the Joker comparisons, the Heath Ledger Joker comparisons.
Oh my goodness. I actually shared a story of somebody. I screenshotted something from Twitter or X and it said, oh, Austin Butler, best villain since Javier Bardem and Heath Ledger. And I go, okay, first of all, for me, he's like the fifth best performance in Dune Part 2.
Easily. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's generous too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I go, and it's laughable to compare. I mean, I still have chills over Bardem and that performance in No Country for Old Men, and Heath Ledger, one of the greatest villains ever. And I know some people will come out of a theater and go, this is the greatest thing. This is the greatest thing. Flash, the movie. Oh, this is the greatest comic book movie ever. I mean, give me a break.
That's tough. That's tough in the critic circle as well, because like when there is so much, there's such an intense reaction to films like that, and then we walk out of it and go, it was fine. We seem like we hate it compared to how everyone else loves it. But the most recent example for me would be, I don't even know if I have a good example. Oh, in fairness, maybe Across the Spider-Verse to me. Like, I get why people love it, and I thought it was really good, but I thought Into the Spider-Verse was far better. Like, I think that's a much better structured film.
I agree.
But I still enjoyed Across the Spider-Verse. I'm excited to see Beyond. But when my review came out, I had people being like, oh, did you really not like it? I was like, no, look at my review. I thought it was really good. But it's not the best out of the... Well, for me anyway, not the best out of the two, so... It's
actually, when I watched it, I had it in my top 10, but that was a few months ago. And then I started watching more movies. And then it slowly dipped out of the top 10 because that's just the way it goes.
That's it.
No, for me, I think it was one of the best movie experiences I had in a long time. I mean, seeing it in IMAX and listening to that score, it gives you chills. I mean, it's a cinematic spectacle, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
The visuals, the production, everything is like top tier level, god tier.
It looks amazing. Hey,
yeah.
Greg Fraser, who's the cinematographer on that film, is an Australian as well. So I'm gonna claim that as like a Aussies are out there shooting good stuff. It's a great looking movie.
Oh yeah, and I mean, but would I call it the best sequel or sci-fi of the 21st century? No, I don't think it's Denis' best sci-fi film of the century. I'll still give that to Arrival, but that's enough.
And quickly as well, where do you sort of stand on Blade Runner 2049? What was your reaction to that? Because I think I would probably say Blade Runner might be just a bit better than Dune Part 2, but that's just me personally.
I wasn't like, like I said, I liked it, but I probably gave it like a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah.
I still remember doing a top 10 of 2017. That's when it came out, Blade Runner?
I think so, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I had somebody comment because I put it in my honorable mentions. Yes. And somebody commented on it like, delete your page. You're a clown for now.
Thanks for the feedback. Really appreciate it. And you know what? They probably hadn't seen the other 10 movies that were on the list higher up as well that, you know, are probably better. Oh, that's gold. I sometimes love the comments.
No, I think, you know, the fact that he could even adapt this book. I mean, have you read the book?
No, I literally actually, like everyone else, just purchased it because I liked part two enough to want to read it. So have you?
Yeah, I've read it like 10 years ago and I'm actually trying to, well, not reread it. I'm listening into the audio. So I don't know if that counts, but it's not an easy read because there's a lot of, you know, technical mumbo jumbo, but now that you have the faces in your head, it's probably be easier to read it. It's kind of when I read Game of Thrones before I watched season one. And then I went to watch it. I go, okay, now I'm reading 2, 3, 4, 5. And I go, okay, now I got Tyrion in my head. I got this in my head. It's nice to have that. But anyway, all right, on to the Academy Awards. I really want to start with make some predictions, but why don't we actually, I'll be remiss if I didn't ask you about your biggest surprises and snubs in this year's nominations.
I only have a couple. Like I have a snub for me. And the tough part is I don't know who I'd take out, but I really wanted to see Andrew Scott nominated for All of Us Strangers. I think he's fantastic in that film. And the fact that it sort of didn't get any love for even supporting actor as well. Like Paul Mescal's good, but like he's really good in the film. I don't think I would have taken anyone else out as supporting actor for him. But Andrew Scott is the one where I really wish he got something as well. And I think the Iron Claw just getting snubbed all around was rough. Yeah. That's a great movie. It's tough. It's a tough movie to watch, but there's so many things it could have been nominated for.
I was blindsided because I was actually visiting in New York and I go, you know what? Let me go watch this. I was a big WWF fan in the 80s with, you know, Ultimate Warrior, all that
Eric's
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't know about this family actually because I stopped like watching and knowing anything about wrestling for the last 30 years. So I go, let me go watch it. I watched it because I wanted to see the guy, I forgot his name, from Mindhunter. I think he's a great actor.
Holt McCallany. Yeah.
Yes.
He's awesome.
And I go, let me just give it a shot. And I thought it was going to be some fun movie about wrestling. And I go, okay, I'll give Zac Efron a chance. You know, he's not my cup of tea when it comes to actors. I came out of that movie. It felt like somebody grabbed my heart.
Oh,
and
man.
Threw it to the ground and then started stomping on it because I was not expecting that at all. And then when I go, of course, like everybody does, you watch a movie, you got to look it up. And I see that all this was true. And then they actually omitted tragedies.
They took one of the brothers out completely. Yeah,
because the director's like, I don't think the audience could handle that. They will be, this is too unbelievable. Nobody's going to believe this. And that last part of him saying, you know, I won't spoil it for people, but there's a lot. Anyway, I don't think he deserved the best actor, but at least give the movie something.
I agree. Like it's his best performance by far. Like it's an incredible film. I think And I know we'll discuss it later. With 10 nominations, I think, for Best Picture, there's room for it to be in the conversation at least. And yeah, I think,
take Maestro out. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we agree on that. And I think there's an argument for Harris Dickinson to sort of be in the shortlist, at least for supporting actor. I think he is kind of and Holt McCallany as well. Yeah. They're both sort of the highlights of that film. So, but just snubs across the board, like even in the other around the awards circuit at the moment and other ceremonies, it just did not get a lot of love. And I'm disappointed.
That's a shame. I have a couple. I have Greta Lee, TLO for Past Lives.
Oh man, what a movie. Yeah.
And I have, you know, I always say Celine Song, but then if you look at the category for Best Director, it's one of the strongest in
it's
a long
tough
time.
It'd be tough to take.
Man, who do you take out? I mean,
it's tough. And like, because I know we'll probably discuss it. I'm very much on record being like, The Zone of Interest didn't hit for me the way it hit for a lot of other people. But for me, the best elements of that film are the directing and the editing.
Yeah,
like it's hard to even a movie that I didn't love to talk about taking Jonathan Glazer out. Yeah.
And the sound mixing, is what really impacts you. Because I went to I just told the story, but I went to a theater, a special like screening in New York, and there was like maybe 30 people in the theater, a really small theater, a pin drop, nobody. It was quiet. And then you could hear the sounds because in the movie, they don't show anything. They're making you listen to the stuff that's happening behind the walls. And that for me, sometimes I always say, you know, hearing it sometimes is worse than seeing it. Like, you know, we see a lot of violence like against women on screen. And I go, if you could just have somebody on the other side listening to it, our imaginations will run wild and it'll have more of an effect.
I agree. But
that sound is just, it was hard. I mean, I thought it was a powerful film. I thought when I saw how they actually made the film with just setting up cameras everywhere. And just saying, you go inside the house and act, and everything will be recorded like a reality show, but with nice cameras.
Almost, yeah, it's like Big Brother ultimately, right? Yeah.
I also have I don't know how to say his last name, but Dominic Sessa from The Holdovers.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I mean, his first film. Oh my goodness.
He's incredible in that film.
And I have one bit of a surprise from Anatomy of a Fall is the little kid Milo.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said this. I remember when I came out of Anatomy of a Fall, it was at the Brisbane Film Festival. So we saw it was a little bit before it had its like cinematic release around the world. And we walked out and everyone was talking, and rightfully so, how good Sandra Hüller was, how good Justine Triet's script was and the direction. And I was the first person to go, what about the kid?
Yeah.
His moment, like his what you would call Oscar scene when he's on the stand,
yes,
is fantastic. It's I think the best scene of the film. So I'm so glad you said that. He's amazing.
He stood on his own, and I was thinking about him more than Sandra. But then when I rewatched it, I go, wow, she's just incredible. But
she's amazing.
And it's tough because when I left Poor Things, I couldn't stop thinking about Emma, and I go, how is she not going to win Best Actress?
Yeah.
But so that Milo was one, and I didn't think Leo or DiCaprio, it was his best. He did really well. I didn't think it was Oscar worthy, but it was much more worthy than Bradley Cooper to me.
Yeah. It's a tough one because I'm the exact same. I don't think it was Leo's best performance. I wasn't as necessarily captivated by him, but I felt that exact same way about Bradley in Maestro. I feel like you're in the same boat. I didn't love Maestro. Yeah, it's kind of like picking, for lack of a better phrase, like the lesser of two evils of that one there. Like you could flip a coin for those two, but then that's when I'd say, like, do you get that like surprise Zac Efron in there? You know what I mean? Like
Andrew Scott.
Oh, sorry, yeah, even Andrew Scott. Yeah, absolutely. Like that to me is a performance that's more deserving of that as well. So
I think sometimes it's to the detriment of actors who are always good. You're like, well, he's always good. What do we expect? And people are like, what about De Niro? But De Niro hasn't had a performance like this since Casino, and that was close to 30 years ago.
That's the issue, right? It's like, yeah, you can't compare Killers of the Flower Moon when he's just done what, like The Wharf with Grandpa or whatever the hell he did. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is what we wanted from De Niro for so long. So,
oh, let me talk about another controversy that has died down, but let me rehash it because this is a podcast and this is funny. Your thoughts on Margot Robbie not getting Best Actress, Gerwig not getting Best Director, and Gosling coming out of nowhere to get a nod for Best Supporting Actor?
Yeah, it's interesting. Hey, Greta Gerwig for director is probably the one where I go, okay, sure, because like we've said, that is a stacked lineup already.
Yeah.
And there's already, like, if you were going to make one other category this year, 10 nominations, it'd be director. Yes. Probably. Because you've got Celine Song in there for Past Lives. I'd talk about, I'd probably have, who directed Iron Claw? Why am I blanking on his name? He did Marcy May Marlene. I can't remember his name for the life of me. Whoever directed Iron Claw would probably go in there as well. Then I'd talk about putting Greta Gerwig in there as well. So that's a tough one. I don't think it's necessarily a snub more than it's a stacked year. To be totally honest.
And best you could actress, also, oh yeah. I was saying you could also, I would also include Alexander Payne for best director.
Totally. Yeah. To be able to literally recreate the aesthetic and feeling of a 70s comedy that well, that's deserved of a nomination. Yeah. So best actress, that's a tough one. I actually haven't seen Naiad, so I'm not sure how good Annette Bening is, if she is good in it. No, yep.
I'm shaking my head no, because I think it was okay. I think Jodie had the better performance in the movie and she's nominated, but I don't think it was, like, again, it's just us talking here, you know, but I don't think it was worthy of an award or a nomination. So, I mean, when you see the movie, it's kind of paint by color, you know, the struggling athlete, she's old, she's, you know, is she going to get over the hump? There's so many roadblocks he has to go through. And then when I read about the movie, I saw some reports saying that the Swimming Association hates this woman. Who the movie is based off of, like, they don't recognize her at all.
Yeah, okay.
That's another story.
Yeah. That's the politics of the of the swimming associations. I'd be happy to drop Annette. But would I put Margot?
I
don't think so. No, and that's not to say, I said this in my review. It's so funny. You say it in your review, yet people still come at you for it. I was like, Ryan Gosling is the most entertaining part of Barbie, like by far, for sure. But Barbie also doesn't work unless Margot Robbie's in it, because she is the heart of the film. She drives the story of that film. So she is absolutely a necessary part and she's fantastic at it. I just don't know if I'd put it in for best actress. It's shortlisted, but I just don't think it'd make the five.
Yeah, when I first saw the nomination, I go, how are you going to nominate Gosling and not? But then my wife's like, well, think about it. The two different categories. You can't compare, which is right. But I would not think about God. He was fun. I loved him in the movie. I love that he was 1,000% invested as Ken.
Yeah.
But when I think about the movie, I thought I liked Robbie the best.
Yep.
And then I even like the biggest shocker for me was seeing America Ferrera get a nomination. Because I go, what are we nominating her for? Is it because she did that monologue, which I thought was a good monologue?
Yeah, and she's good at it,
The other 80% of the movie, she's not Oscar nominee worthy.
It kind of screams, not even an Oscar worthy thing, but like how big of an effect they have on the film as well. Like it kind of screams like that Anne Hathaway Les Mis nomination for me. It's like, yeah, sure, you probably have one of the best parts of the movie, but like I don't. When I think of Les Mis, I don't automatically go to Anne Hathaway for that. Yeah. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
The and then Gosling she won, thing, right?
Yeah.
Then she win? Won.
Yeah, yeah, she won. So I mean, like, what is this? What are we doing? So and the Gosling thing, I'm not sold on. I think it's fun, but I'd put in Harris Dickinson or Jeremy Allen White for the Iron Claw, to be totally honest.
When it comes to winning awards for a performance, it should be memorable that you go, wow. You talk to other people. Do you remember this performance by such and such?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. I always talk about Ian McKellen for Gandalf in the Fellowship. And I go, that is a memorable performance that probably deserved to win. But back then, they're like, we're not going to give this to some wizard.
It's a fantasy. It's not a real drama, but it's like, well, it's more dramatic than most of the stuff that was coming out at that time, right? Like,
yeah, and I go, who won? And they go, I don't know exactly, because you don't remember.
Don't remember, but you remember Gandalf. You remember Ian McKellen. So
that's funny. You just said Shakespeare in Love. Here's a question: worst film or films you could think of that won Best Picture? I have three in the last 30 years. I'm not gonna go back 90, but.
Name a few. This is all from the top of my head. So Shakespeare in Love's definitely up there as one of them. Here's the thing. I know everyone goes after Crash. Not Soderbergh. Who did Crash? God damn it. But I know controversially Crash was one that
Paul Haggis.
Haggis, that's right. I don't think that was a bad film. As bad as people thought it was going to be, but it definitely didn't deserve the Best Picture win for me. And I mean, look, I'm just going quickly off the top of my head. Those are probably the main two. I'm like, everything that I kind of like has won. Maybe, you know what, The King's Speech as well.
Yeah.
Has anyone watched that since 2010?
I really like The King's Speech.
It's good, but then you're going up against Black Swan, The Fighter, Inception, The Social Network.
Yeah.
Like Social Network is one of my favorite movies of the 2010s. Like that's tough.
Yeah. That could have been Nolan's first best director, but
it could have.
Here's some movie. Actually Crash is in my list. just because I think Brokeback Mountain is a masterpiece and should have won. And I think that if that were now, Brokeback Mountain wins Best Picture.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I was only in fairness, not to age myself. Like I was 10 when that came out. But even I remember the, in quotations, controversies of like a mainstream gay romance. And everyone's like, whoa, we can do this now. It's like, oh, yeah, sure we can. Of course we can. But yeah, totally. I think it's a far better film than Crash.
I have the Green Book.
Oh, of course.
Which I don't think is a horrible film, but not better than Black Panther. I could have Black Klansman, The Favorite, or Roma.
Yeah. Even A Star Is Born, I think, is a better film than Green Book, even though it's, you know, pretty generic by the numbers. Yeah.
And here's some movies that I'm not saying that they're the worst because I enjoyed them. Coda winning Best Picture. That was such a surprise.
Yeah.
Because you had The Power of the Dog. You had Dune. You had Drive My Car. You had Belfast was such a Oscar Beatty movie. But even Licorice Pizza. You know, West Side Story. You had so many other movies that could have won. And
That's interesting. Yeah. I'm just looking at that list now. That's a very 50-50 list for me. Like I loved Nightmare Alley, but I can see why it didn't win. But to me, I would be like, oh, that's probably a better. And this is me. I loved Coda. Like if something gets me emotionally, I'm like, yes, it is the best film ever made. I know it's not, but I still talk about Coda quite fondly. The Best Picture win was quite. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's not a bad movie at all, but you look at what it's up against and you go, oh, okay.
Here's the worst of all time. You already mentioned it, is Shakespeare in Love winning over Saving Private Ryan. I mean, give me a break.
We know that's the Weinstein effect. Weinstein.
Yep, exactly. Because there's no way. Because I think the best part of that movie is Judi Dench as queen.
Yeah. No. I mean, arguably the only great thing. And again, it's not a terrible movie, but it's not a Best Picture winner.
No,
it's not a Best Picture winner.
And I think she won Best Supporting Actress, right? And she was on screen for like 8 minutes or something.
Yeah,
it's
another Anne Hathaway moment. But that was across the board nominations for that film. I think it almost got nominated for everything.
Well, last one, let me just bring up one more. Like 2016 was a crazy year. Obviously, you had the La La Land thing with Moonlight. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying Arrival was the best film of that year.
It's a great movie. It is a great movie. Again, another Denis, or pretty much masterpiece, you could call it. But then you look at, I mean, La La Land, sure, amazing film. Manchester by the Sea, I liked it, but I haven't watched it since it came out. So to me, that kind of says no.
Nah, Hella High Water is such an underrated film so that nobody underrated. Talks about.
No one talks. And I mean, that's that early Taylor Sheridan when we were like, yeah. He wasn't trying to pump out a TV show every month.
That was right after he did Sicario. That was back to back. Sicario, then that one.
And then Wind River after that. And you kind of like, this dude's got like great scripts in him. So, but I agree. I think Arrival is the one that year. Again, not taking away from Moonlight because that movie's phenomenal, but Arrival is the best movie that year.
Yeah. All right. Since we're talking best picture throughout the years, I got a question from Muckman_movies. He asks, which film do you think deserved the 94 best picture Oscar? That's the one that Forrest Gump won. Shawshank Redemption. You had Pulp Fiction.
Forrest Gump winning.
You had Four Weddings and a Funeral and mm-hmm. Quiz Show. So those were the five.
Ooh, Quiz Show's. I don't know if I've ever admitted this on a podcast before, so this could be an exclusive. I don't think Forrest Gump's a good movie at all. I'm very anti Forrest Gump, but I don't know if that's controversial, but I do not like that film at all. But then you're looking at like my gosh, that's a heavy hitting year. Hey, I love Shawshank Redemption. I think that movie's fantastic. I love Pulp Fiction. Tarantino was like many people, like as a teenager, my introduction into a lot of films. I genuinely think if we're looking at an Oscar worthy like film, Quiz Show is hard to beat. No, Quiz Show to me, it's a great film, but it also has, if I'm playing sort of what I want to win and how the Oscars sort of work, it has those elements of both. It's the loud, brash performances. It's that tight screenplay. It's like within the industry somewhat as well. So I think Quiz Show kind of should have won, but like if I was just going straight off like what I wanted to win, I'd probably go Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I'd do Pulp Fiction too. I think that movie, I was 15 when it came out and I watched it. Mm. I had a cousin who worked at a movie theater and I went in and then I watched it like three times that same weekend. It's one of those experiences you have with the movie and I go, what the? Because I've never seen a movie structured that way ever. Because wait a minute, this is the beginning. Why?
It's so interesting you say that, hey, because that's like, I don't know if it was marketed that way. Like you don't know if everything's sort of non-linear, right? So you've gone in and it's just this insane experience of storytelling.
You have Bruce Willis killing Travolta like midway, and then you have Travolta throughout the rest of the movie.
In the next scene, right? Yeah.
So it's kind of like, what the fuck's going on? I think he got nominated for, he won for screenplay that year, but yeah, right, I would totally do Pulp Fiction in that one.
Nothing's fair. Yeah.
Here's another question. Every shot of painting. If you're in charge of adding a new category, which one do you choose?
I'm going to just jump on the bandwagon here because I know a lot of people have been talking about it for a while now, but stunt category.
Yeah.
I absolutely think there needs to be a stunt category because not even the last 10 years and not even just the Tom Cruise era of stunts or the John Wick sort of level of stunt choreography that goes in. I'm talking back to like the Matrix films and the Lord of the Rings films, like how those stunt teams weren't properly recognized for what they pulled off is a crime. It's a crime to film. So I definitely think a stunt category. And then outside of that, I think not necessarily adding a new category, but looking at motion capture performances as eligible for acting as well. I mean, Gollum is probably, you know, Andy Serkis could have at least been nominated for that performance. Like that's incredible. Like we
Planet of the Apes.
Exactly. So, and we seem to, oh, not we, but the Academy seemed to give awards for people who transform their body. You know, we got Gary Oldman looking like Winston Churchill with some makeup. We got Matthew McConaughey shredding weights to look like he's got HIV. So we reward those. So like, why can't we reward someone who is, sure, they got a couple of dots in their face when they're in person, but they've still got to give a realistic performance to convey a lot of stuff through a non-human way. So those are my two there.
I think for anybody who, you know, is a snob and goes, oh, that's not real acting, I would suggest you watch the behind the scenes of The Last of Us video game. How they have all the dots on their face, but they're acting one against one another, and they're truly acting. They're not just No, you go, holy shit, this is for real.
Okay. Sorry, it's a tangent. Have you watched the part two, Last of Us Part Two making of documentary as well? And they, when they're filming that scene, have you watched that one?
Played the game, so I know what's going to happen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I haven't seen, I think I've seen the featurettes of, yeah, behind the scenes of how it they, it's chilling.
It's just as brutal to watch them perform it as it was. Because I remember, I know there was leaks before it came out. This is such a big tangent. But I didn't have anything spoiled for me. And I remember playing that. I remember I got the game the weekend it came out. I played it in one weekend. It was the most depressing weekend of my life. when that happens and then watching them all perform it, I was like, oh my God, it is brutal. So that's such a good comparison.
I'm going to agree with you. Stunts. I mean, you talk about Matrix, Lord of the Rings. Jackie Chan in the 80s, 70s.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, the man almost died in every movie.
Yeah, that's entertainment.
It looks awesome.
But I think as well, it's rewarding the teams behind it. Like, there are so many people who go into making something look awesome like that. I know everyone talks about Tom Cruise doing his own stunts. He can't do them unless he's got a massive, and he talks about the teams, the stunt teams behind it. So I think they're definitely, they definitely need their recognition.
Yeah. I always remember Jackie Chan doing an interview. He goes, America, so safe. Cranes, this $5 million cranes and you know, all these people surrounding.
He's just like, Hong Kong, around my waist.
Hong Kong, just tie a rope. Let's go. The sun is going down. We got to shoot this. There you go. That's just the way.
Awesome. I love it.
All right. Let me just do another question here. Purgatory Flicks. He says, say hi to Nick. And then he says, he makes a statement. He goes, Oppenheimer is taking home Best Picture, Actor, Score, and Cinematography. We'll get to all that in a bit. But
yeah. I have to disagree with him. Yeah.
He also asked me, he asked another question, early predictions for next year's awards. That's all for you, because I've seen like maybe four 2024 releases.
Look, in complete fairness, there's only one movie at the moment that is eligible for anything right now, and that's Dune Part Two. I think it will be talked about a lot. I think obviously cinematography, visual effects, probably Best Picture, probably Best Adapted Screenplay, unless something, you know, quite incredible comes out. But aside from that, that's for what's out. That's about it at the moment. I don't think there'll be too much. The only other one I would slightly mention is that Kingsley Benadire will probably be talked about early on for Best Actor, because I think he was quite good as Bob Marley. I think he was really good. But then when all these films come out later in the year, the ones that we don't even know are getting released at the moment, that's, you know, the genuine Oscar movies, that'll be a different story. So.
Yeah, let me make another prediction like I did for
Oh yeah, here we go.
All right, March for me is March 8th. For you, is March 9th. I'm gonna say 11 because I don't think it's gonna get that many acting nods. Like Oppenheimer.
I agree. That's very true. Yep.
I don't see Timothy getting a Best Actor or Zendaya or anybody getting
no supporting actors for that. Now,
technical, boom, is gonna get every single nomination. Director, like you said, Best Picture, all that stuff. So score, obviously.
Market.
All right, boom. All right, let's start our predictions here. So, all right, let's start with Best Supporting Actor. And why don't you give me, who do you think will win and who would you like to see win?
I think definitely for the win, it's hard to go past Robert Downey Jr. He's sweeping it up. Left, right, and center. So I think that's his unlock. I do want to see him win too. That's probably one of my favorite performances of the year. I do want to like mention as like sort of a runner up though, I think Mark Ruffalo and Poor Things. I think he does the silliness that Ryan Gosling did with Barbie, but there's a bit more substance and sincerity to the character. So that's just more of a special mention, but who I want to win, who will win, I think is going to be Downey.
You find it ironic that Mark Ruffalo has been quoted saying he hated doing the British accent.
Yes, it's funny. Like,
And then he gets nominated for best supporting actor.
It's like Burt Reynolds, like he's like, I didn't want to do Boogie Nights, and they're like, that was the best one of the best performances of your career.
I'm gonna agree with you. I think Robert is probably one of the few locks to win. And I love seeing the movie. I go, this dude just won an Oscar. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And before this role, I mean, all people thought about Robert Downey Jr. Oh, he's just Iron Man. He's just because he did it for so long. But this dude could fucking act. I mean, other, except that silly movie with the animals, he's always, which is that one?
I forgot about Doolittle, Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, I always go back to Zodiac. I go back to all these other movies that he's done.
Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Yeah. And now he's doing a new limited series at Park Chan-wook.
I did see that. I saw that pop up today. Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's my choice. That's who I want to see win as well, because, you know, I'm just tired of him getting knocked for being in Marvel movies. Just who cares?
Iron Man, yeah.
And don't forget, he was the best thing about all those movies.
Absolutely.
All right, why don't we go to Best Supporting Actress? And this is another category that has been kind of like Best Supporting Actor. Devine Joy Randall has been winning every single award for this. And I'm going to be honest, I loved her in the movie, and I think I do want to see her win. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the more weaker categories to me. I don't know if you agree or not.
No, I agree. I think the nominations here aren't... I haven't seen Naiad, so I can't comment on Jodie Foster, but I would tend to align with you in the sense that she's probably the best part of that movie. We've spoken about American Ferrera, sure. Danielle Brooks to me was one of the best parts of Color Purple. I think she was fantastic in the film, but I didn't walk out of that movie going, that's going to take any Oscars. So it's really just Devine Joy Randolph's Emily Blunt's to lose, really.
Yeah, I think Emily Blunt, I don't think that one scene, that interrogation scene, is enough for her to win over Devine Joy. If she was like that the whole movie, I would say yes. But that was a freaking amazing scene, though.
Oh, it's incredible, right? Like, that's also incredible this is not discounting her performance at all, but there is a lot going on in that scene, technically as well. That is just as amazing. And the score, like Ludwig Göransson's score, is fantastic in that moment. So I agree with you. I think Devine Joy Randolph is a lock for that one. And I think out of the two performances there, she would be the one that I was I want you to win.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned score. So let's go to best original score.
Sweet.
who do you got?
For me, based on these noms, it's both. It's Ludwig Göransson for Oppenheimer for both. I listen to that, just in general, if I'm writing reviews or something, I'll have that in my ears at the moment. So actually June Part 2 just took over that, but Oppenheimer's there for a long time.
Come on, no Indiana Jones. I'm just kidding. Yes, Oppenheimer for the win. I don't see him not winning that. I would be completely baffled if he doesn't win. So
I think as well, the only other memorable score that was really sticking out to me, and this is not discrediting any other scores, was probably Robbie Robertson with Killers of the Flower Moon. Like, that's probably the one where I remember the most music from. So,
How about this one is a tough one. And I don't know, you've probably seen all Best International Feature Film.
Yeah, funnily enough, I haven't seen, the only one I haven't seen is Society of the Snow, which shocks me because that's like the most accessible out of all of these on Netflix, but I've heard it's fantastic. I think it's going to be hard to go past the Zone of Interest. I think that's probably the one that out of all the ones I've seen, probably stuck out the most. I find it quite funny that the Zone of Interest, it has a British director, but it's a German film.
Yeah.
Perfect Days has another European director in it.
Japanese.
Benders. That's the funny part. So I think Zone of Interest probably will take that. And I don't think we're going to see a Parasite this year. I don't think we're going to see a double international feature and Best Picture win for it.
So no. Society
it'll get it'll get its roses for
I think Society of the Snow is an excellent movie. Which is hard because, it's considered a 2023 film because it's in this Oscar ballot.
Sure.
And then when I'm trying to do a list, well, it says it's 2024, but it came out in 2022. I'm just confused.
Yeah,
anyway,
it's yeah. That New York LA release schedule, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's far superior than the 93 Alive, which I did like and enjoy. I mean, Ethan Hawke is so young in that one, but this one is just so much hard hitting to hear these actors speaking in native tongue in Spanish. And the visuals, the performances are all amazing. And I wouldn't be surprised if it won, but I don't think it wins over the Zone of Interest. I think the Zone of Interest, the topic is too powerful. It's hitting a lot of notes that are too comparable to other situations around the world. I don't want to get into that. I just watched Perfect Days and I go, I've never seen a movie with such little dialogue that I was engrossed and just watching a guy clean toilets. And I was fascinated by his life. It's like mundane. He's looking at this is total cinephile movie, because if I give this to some random friend and he'd be like, what the hell is this crap?
Yeah, I'm just watching a guy clean toilets for 2 hours. And the moment where Perfect Days works for me is sort of leading into that third act when we see a member of his family.
Yes.
And that's when you kind of go, oh, everything that I've seen before this has worked like that. And that's when you know it clicks. Yeah. So I think it's absolutely deserved the nomination for sure.
And I don't know who was in charge of the soundtrack, but kudos.
Great soundtrack. Yeah.
Just the song selection was perfect.
Yes, perfect. Absolutely.
No pun intended, I guess. How about best animated feature? And I'll give you let me just say, I have not seen The Boy and the Heron. I've been wanting to see that for so long. I screwed up. I was supposed to watch it in New York and I overslept, and there was only one showing at like 9:30 in the morning, and I go, I can't. And then it hasn't come out here where I live, so I can't comment on that. But the one thing I'll say is that I'm pretty upset that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is not, and they have Elemental, because that's okay, but it's not as good as Turtles. Come on.
I agree.
Have you seen all five?
I haven't seen Nimona, which again is the most accessible because it's on Netflix.
That one's actually good. I gave that one like an 8 out of 10. It was very
okay. All right. I'll try to catch it before the ceremony. To me, Elemental being in there is just again, Elemental's not a bad movie. I actually don't think it's a bad movie. But to me, compared to Boy Heron, Robot Dreams and Spider-Man, I don't think it is on that same level. I would love to see... This is a tough one because The Boy and the Heron is interesting. It's incredibly well made. It looks beautiful. Voice cast, because I watched the English dub, because... Studio Ghibli films and Miyazaki films, like, they're pretty much the only Japanese animated films that I will watch dubbed, because the voice cast is usually pretty damn good. But it's weird. It's a weird, it's even in Miyazaki levels, like, it's a weird movie. I do think Spider-Man probably takes this. I think Boy and the Heron, if it does win, won't be a shock though.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one for me. I think Spider-Man will win, and I kind of want Boy and the Heron to win based on how I feel about Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think for all the talk, I think you're right. I'm gonna agree on that one. This one's a tough one. I mean, I'm pretty sure you have a clear-cut winner, but best cinematography.
Yeah,
this is tough. You have Killers, you have Oppenheimer, and even Poor Things was beautifully shot.
Yeah, and Poor Things was so experimental is the wrong word, because Yorgos Lanthimos has been doing that his last like three films, but it's very captivating. I do want Killers of the Flower Moon to win. I think there's something about the way Scorsese films look that just really attracts me. I think he manages to capture in such a It's a very bleak story, very intentionally as well, based on the subject matter. But the bleakness of the story, while still being visually captivating, is quite a hard, tough thing to balance. So I want Killers of the Flower Moon to win. I do think Poor Things might take it. I know there's going to be a lot of chat about Oppenheimer with its use of IMAX and whatnot, but this is a tough category. I haven't seen El Conde, but this is a tough one. Yeah, I. I think Poor Things might do it.
I just think Oppenheimer is going to sweep. So they probably don't take that. Yeah. But I would like to see Killers, Rodrigo win.
Yeah. Maestro, I understand the nomination. I do think there are some very good looking shots in that film. But yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah. That's tougher than direct. Yeah. That's a stacked category as well. And then you look at we already kind of briefly discussed the snubs, but I mean, Holdovers would be something I'd probably look at putting in there as well. Great looking movie. So yeah, tough.
Let's go to costume design. I just picked Poor Things. It's just the costumes are incredible, but Killers is great. I mean,
Barbie
is again great. I mean, production design for Barbie. Is it nominated for production design? Yeah, I think so.
It is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it is.
That one's tough too, because poor things
that can go against that as well. That's tough. Like these below the line awards are quite stacked this year because there were so many great looking and great sounding films.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna do Poor Things, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Barbie win, you know, production.
Sure.
Just because. Yeah, that one's tough too, because you have Killers. Even though I wasn't the biggest fan of Napoleon, it looks amazing.
It does look good.
I mean, a really Scott movie is not going to skimp on anything. He knows how to make a film. I was just a little upset about the dialogue and acting. But anyway.
So two of the most important ingredients, right?
So who do you got for design? Did you say Poor Things?
I'm going to go Poor Things for costume design. And then Barbie for production design. Okay, cool.
How about sound mixing? Best sound, because like we talked about this, the zone of interest. When I watched that film, it impacted me because I kept remembering the sounds and I go, holy shit, this is like haunting.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a big part of the, like you were saying earlier, it's what you hear and then imagine is far worse than what you can see. So I think that's where the sort of guttural impact of the film lies. So I think it is going to win. I think there's actually a lot of talk about it too, which is usually an indicator. Oppenheimer is probably the only one giving it a run for its money.
Yeah.
Because that everyone will sort of reference either the Trinity test or the school hall scene after the bombs have dropped.
Yeah.
And the sound drops out and comes back in. Like it's a great use of sound, but the overall soundscape of Zone of Interest, I agree with you. I think it's the one that's going to take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to the creator. Did sounded great. I mean, it wasn't the best, but.
And it looked great. Like
it's one of those films that go, wow, this could be special, but.
Maybe another two or three drafts of the screenplay could have helped.
Yes, maybe. Let's do screenplay. Let's start with best original screenplay, because this is the one that's making my head hurt. Because you have Anatomy of a Fall, Holdovers, Past Lives. Three of my favorite films, probably in my top, all three in my top five. And all beautifully written, beautifully acted. I mean, every word of all three, I don't know. That's one of those tough ones that either one of those three winning, I would be happy with.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think if we're shortening it down a little bit further, I'd probably take the Holdovers out. Like, as much as I love the way that movie made me feel, I love it. But you got to look at, especially screenplay is not just about dialogue, but when you look at Past Lives and Anatomy of a Fall and how there are some really impactful monologues in that film, in both those films, sorry. Anatomy of a Fall all relies on its dialogue. Like, you got to listen so intently to what people are saying, especially when they're on the stand in court or the argument scene in the kitchen. But then Past Lives, I think about how much the pretty much that last 20 minutes in the bar and everything that is said in that scene, like I just got goosebumps thinking about it, is so, I remember sitting in the cinema, it was a sold out session at a film festival for Past Lives. And during that whole bar scene leading up to those last 5 minutes, all you could hear was people sniffling. Like, it was just, everyone was so impacted by what was being said. So
what was being said and what was not being said.
That, right? Like, that's, oh God, I need to watch that movie again.
Because you have Tao Yo, who is acting with his eyes, and he's longing for somebody. And it's just kind of like, I remember why it was the first movie of last year that I gave a 5 out of 5 on Letterboxd. I go, this
deserving.
This is five stars right here.
So in saying that, and maybe this is now just acting completely off emotion, I'd love to see Past Lives win. I think that would be incredible. That's what I want to win, and that's what I think will win. Yeah.
Anatomy of a Fall, when it gets to the courtroom, I love courtroom stuff.
Yeah, same. Movies and TV. Yeah.
I don't know his name. Maybe you do. But the guy who played the prosecutor, he was fantastic as well.
Oh, the bald guy. Oh my God. I don't know his name, but no, he was incredible. Yeah.
Because he was pissing me. I'm like, God, this guy's an asshole, but I'm like, he's acting so well.
Yeah. You can't get mad at him. He's like, he's doing so well, but yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I wouldn't be too unhappy with either three winning, but I'm probably pulling for Past Lives to win for that.
Yeah.
Best adapted screenplay is more of a toss up because you have American Fiction, which I really liked. Which that was kind of a surprise to see there. Barbie was a surprise.
Yep.
And then Oppenheimer, Poor Things is the Zone of Interest.
This is a tough one because it's funny because the screenplays are not, maybe aside from American Fiction, the screenplays are not exactly what comes to the forefront for these five movies for me. However, I think Oppenheimer might win it based on the fact that there's just a lot of chatter around the way Christopher Nolan wrote it all in the first person of Oppenheimer, which is very unusual for a screenplay. So I think there will be a lot of people, especially in the, because I think what people need to remember is that while the Academy do vote an overall, you will get a large majority of votes from the screenwriters who are in the Academy who might go, oh, that's a very interesting way to write that script. If we're thinking about the technicalities of it, I think Oppenheimer might take it, but I would love to see American Fiction win it, I think, because from what I've heard and how Claude Jefferson adapted the novel, it is different to how the film is presented, but it still sort of keeps that foundation of it there, which again, for me, American Fiction was a very pleasant surprise. I loved that movie.
Yeah, I just recently watched it, I think it was a month or two ago. Really enjoyed it. I completely forgot to put it up on my letterbox. But I'm going to give it to Oppenheimer just because, I mean, you have Robert. I mean, there's so many other than Killian. You have Robert. You have, right now I'm blanking with names. Even young Harrison Ford or Han Solo did a good job.
Alden Ehrenreich. Yeah.
He was kind of handling Robert Downey Jr.'s character. Now, I think it was to have a movie that's 3 hours full of dialogue to not be boring is quite a task. And I think Oppenheimer gets it. And why don't we just finish off with this one? Is the hard one. This best director. And like I said, this is one of the strongest ones. I wouldn't be upset other than I don't think Jonathan Glazer, but the other four,
I totally get what you mean. This is Nolan's to lose. It's the Oppenheimer sweep, right? Like that, he will most likely win. I think it's at least a healthy mix of deserves it for Oppenheimer, but also one of those career Oscars. At the same time. If I'm taking Oppenheimer out of the question, I think I'd like to see Yorgos Lanthimos win for Poor Things. Yeah. I think that is a very well directed film.
And it sucks because like Scorsese, he's a guy, he should have already had three freaking best director awards.
Oh, he should be drowning in Oscars at the moment. But that's the thing. I probably wouldn't give it to him for Killers of the Flower Moon. That's the issue, right? But I get it. I think Justine Triet, I think we're going to see more of her. I think Anatomy of a Fall has made enough of an impact for not just film fans, but I think general audiences, I think, are talking about it as well. I think we're going to see some cool stuff from her. So I think her Oscar won't be too far away, to be honest.
You're right about this being a career moment for award for Nolan, because he's been nominated or not nominated so many times.
And that's the thing, right? Yeah, and he's got such an impact on cinema in general. Like, you know, just despite whatever arguments people may have about, you know, oh, he only makes blockbuster films that appeal to the popcorn audience, you kind of go, well, yes and no, but like Oppenheimer proved to you that you can have a popcorn movie that's incredibly impactful, and it's not even really a popcorn movie, to be honest, right? Like I said, it's 3 hours of dialogue.
The fact that it made that much money, it's still baffling to me.
Almost. It's crazy. Yeah,
a 3 hour movie that with a budget, I think, was $100 million.
Yeah, they're right. Oh, I mean, universally incredibly happy. They've had a couple of good year last year, that's for sure.
If he doesn't win, let's say he doesn't win, right? Okay. He's probably going to say, okay, what do I have to do?
Yeah.
What do I have to do to freaking win an award here?
What is the next movie to, yeah.
What's my next Oppenheimer?
He'll probably have to find a way to actually put us in Inception somehow and make it a complete 4D experience.
I read that he wants to do a horror film and people were just making jokes. Like he'll probably conjure up some spirits for his movie.
all practical demons for this horror film. Yeah.
Let's get to best actress.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, the only thing I got out of Maestro was Carey Mulligan. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for her, I probably would have bailed after like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Did you watch it in the cinemas or on Netflix?
No, just Netflix.
Yeah, okay. I saw it in the cinemas literally the day before it came out on Netflix because I said to myself, I'm not going to watch this movie once it hits Netflix because I'm very bad at sort of catching up on things.
Yeah.
So I forced myself to watch it and I agree with you. I think Carey Mulligan is the best part of that movie. I don't think she's going to win.
No,
I think because I think it's a two horse race between Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone, to be honest. I want Emma Stone to win. I think part of the appeal of that performance is the fact that she really just gives herself over to that performance. And that's a tough line to tread because she has to ultimately be a child for the first third of the film, like in a mental capacity. And that's a tough thing to pull off. Like you either do it with the sincerity that she does and pulls it off, or you look like Tom Green.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's, and she didn't. So I think she, and there's a vulnerability to her performance, both like obviously physically, but also emotionally as well. I think that is the most rounded performance probably out of the five, but if Lily Gladstone won, I also wouldn't be upset. I don't think she was the best part of Killers of the Flower Moon, but I don't think that's her fault. I think the movie focusing on that relationship between more so De Niro and DiCaprio's characters felt like more of the forefront and she was a victim of everything that was happening.
Yeah.
And the performance is still good. But I think comparing between the two, I think Emma Stone's probably got this.
I think the third or the last half of Killers kind of affected my decision. Because sure. She was kind of put to the side.
She's to have De Niro. Spoilers, but she's in bed for the whole second half of the movie, right? Yeah.
And she, you have Leo and De Niro in the forefront. But that first half, she was really, really good.
Yeah.
But like I said, when I left the theater watching Poor Things, I'm like, oh my goodness,
that's the one, right?
I can't stop thinking. And the other one was Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
I go, okay, Emma, you have some competition now. But I don't think she has a shot. I think this is Emma or Lily, and who knows? I mean, Lily winning for SAG was a surprise because that's Emma Stone has been winning.
Right?
Yeah. Emma Stone has been winning for everything else, and her not winning SAG was like, oh, okay. Best actor, this is the one that I go, okay, this is two surprises. So you have Coleman Domingo for Rustin, but Bradley Cooper is the one that go, okay, so is Maestro getting 7 to 8 nominations if it's not produced by Scorsese and Spielberg? That's a question.
No, I don't think so. And I think the Netflix money behind it probably helped as well, because I think a lot of people forget that it costs a lot of money to campaign for this award season. I don't think Bradley's helped himself on the press run for the last few weeks. I don't want to make fun of the guy, but just watching that video of him talking about how emotionally affected was by feeling the presence of Leonard Bernstein, and he's in the same room as Leonard Bernstein's three children and was the most emotional about it, to me just kind of screamed like, there's a bit of a disconnect with reality there.
Yeah.
And people see that and go like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, like the movie wasn't great. So that's how invested you were. I don't know. Like, I don't want to pick on the guy, but I just sit there and go, oh, okay. Gives me the ick a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. There was a scene that he is conducting. This is a 6-minute scene.
Yeah. That's
it. Was really, really good. But then I watched a video of an actual conductor saying that all the stuff he's doing is nonsense.
Yes, and that doesn't shock me. Like, he said he worked for 2 years on getting that scene right, but I'm like, the difference is that at that point in Bernstein's career, sure, Cooper might be just mimicking the performance, like, movement for movement, but Bernstein was a composer for decades leading up to that point. So you can kind of be a little bit loosey-goosey with what you do. So, I don't think Cooper's in the conversation. For me, Cillian Murphy's probably going to win, but the upset could be we know the Oscars do love a good upset every now and then, and it wouldn't even be an upset. I'd be happy if Paul Giamatti also won for the holdovers, I think.
I agree 1,000%. I've loved Paul since I saw him in Private Parts back in 97.
Yeah.
He was such a small actor who came out, every small role he had, he always crushed.
Yeah,
and he finally had a big time role in Sideways, which he wasn't even nominated for. That's one of the biggest snubs of all time.
That is criminal.
And him, I've watched The Holdovers 3 times now, and I've loved it more and more and more each time. And I see him.
That's exciting.
And I see him, and I go, God damn, I just want him to win, because he was nominated for Cinderella Man, Best Supporting Actor.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot he was in that. Yeah. So I think this is
I think it's just a second. I don't think he's won one award, right? Big time award. It's all been Cillian, pretty much.
It's been Cillian for most of it. There was one where Giamatti won, but actually I think it was the Globe anyway. So it's in the comedy category. So
yes.
That's the sort of was the indicator to be like, if someone was going to push Cillian off the podium there, it would have been him. But again, this feels like we've said it a few times, the Oppenheimer sweep. I feel like Killian's probably got this one.
And again, I'm not going to be upset because it's such a great performance, and he's been a great actor for so long. Mm. But if they say Paul, I'm going to be ecstatic.
There'll be an absolute standing ovation from my living room, that's for sure.
All right, so let's get to the biggest one. Well, not the biggest one, but the last award that's always given in the Oscars is Best Picture. And let me ask you this. I asked you this off before we started recording. Is 10 nominations too much, or should we go back to the 5? Or should we have more?
And it's a good question. And it's a good talking point, because I feel like there's pros and cons to the 10. The cons is that everything gets a shot, even if it doesn't really deserve it. Looking at this list, I'm taking Maestro out, I'm taking Killers out, I'm taking Barbie out, I'm taking Zone of Interest out. So that's 4 gone already. However, the pros for 10, and this is just me being always conscious that as film lovers and film Instagram community and film critics and stuff, we do live in a bubble with this sort of stuff. So sometimes the 10 best picture nominees works in the favor of getting general audiences to watch these movies when they probably wouldn't. Yeah. When you slam Academy Award nominated best picture film, Killers, not even, what's the best examples? Probably Anatomy of a Fall or Zone of Interest, or even American Fiction, right? When you slam Academy Award nominated for Best Picture, people go, oh, okay, it must be good then. And then they watch it. And then whether they like it or not, that is either money to the box office, or that's another view on streaming that then goes, okay, more films like this are going to get made. And that's the hope anyway. So there's pros and cons. As a in quotations purist, I'd love for it to go back to 5 so we can have this definite, like, defining this is the best of the best. But I do see the appeal of 10. I don't think I'd add more though.
I think what the biggest reason why is people were saying, well, why aren't popular movies in this best picture category? It's always the snooty indie films that nobody even watches. It's always best picture nominees. And I think that tension rose because all these comic book movies were making so much money. Or why isn't remember that talk about Spider-Man? Is it going to be nominated for Best Picture? Remember the last one?
No Way Home. Yeah, of course.
But I would like to see it to go back to 5, because I would take out 5 movies here. Like, my 5 would probably be Oppenheimer, Anatomy or no, I wouldn't take out Oppenheimer. I would keep these are the five I would have.
Sorry, I freaked out there for a second. I was like, Tony, you're throwing hot takes, bro. Oh my god.
I would probably keep Holdovers, Anatomy of a Fall, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, and maybe Poor Things.
Poor Things, yeah.
Those would be my five. I'd probably leave Killers out, but that would be like number six. Yeah, but then again, then the people agree. Well, those movies are not that really mainstream. Like instead of, you know, just Oppenheimer, but sure, I guess I mean, didn't they just add a category about best what was it, best cast or best something?
To, yeah,
not best sure. cast, but best I don't know, I forgot what it was.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about though. Yeah. But it's one of those things where like. Sure, Anatomy might not be the most popular film, but then you look at things like Poor Things was pretty well received by general audiences. Everyone is posting about the fact that it's on Disney Plus at the moment, so it's going to get a more of an audience. It's Emma Stone, who is a pretty well-known, regarded actress.
I think I'm sorry to interrupt you, but for people listening who have little kids, don't let them see Poor Things. Okay.
Bye. Oh God, no. Yeah. That's I think you'll find out pretty quick that that's not a kids film, even though it is on a Disney Plus.
It's like people going to watch Ted. Oh, this cute little movie about a teddy bear.
Oh, I another slight tangent. I used to work in a cinema. I worked there for a couple of years, and I worked when Ted came out, but the biggest one was Sausage Party. And they would just see an animated film. They're like, oh, is that, can we watch that? And I was like, just so you're aware, there's a character who says the C word within the first 5 minutes of this movie. And they're like, oh, is it not for kids? I'm like, yeah, I mean, do your research. But that was an interesting, and Deadpool was the other one. Cause everyone's just like, superhero. It's a superhero. It's like, it's not your family superhero. But there's popular, like the popular film Oscar, I totally get. But when you look at the popular movies last year, which were pretty much Barbie and Oppenheimer, they're still there. They're nominated for Best Picture. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's, I think a lot of people then more reference it to, like you said, the superhero films. Like, did Spider-Man deserve an Oscar nom? Did maybe Avengers Endgame deserve an Oscar nom? Like that's, and I mean, Black Panther sort of started changing the path towards it, I guess a little bit. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few years.
Was Logan nominated for Best Picture? I can't remember.
Good question. I don't think it was nominated for Best Picture. I think it was nominated for Screenplay, though, I love that movie.
I just looked it up. The newest award category is going to be Best Achievement in Casting.
Okay. And that, casting directors and stuff, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the category will roll out at the 2026 Oscars, so it's not this year.
Okay. Yeah, Logan nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. Which pretty well deserved, but that's the funny thing is that sure, that's a superhero film, but it kind of goes against all the conventions of a superhero film. It's a drama, and that's not to discredit superhero films. I don't want to get
canceled. And it's one of those because it started in 2009 having more than five nominations, and I think there was an uproar because The Dark Knight wasn't nominated for Best Picture in 2008. Right.
Yes, of course.
Because you had The Reader, Milk, Frost Nixon, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and Slumdog Millionaire. I mean, boom, take out Frost Nixon, The Reader. I'm sorry, The Reader is really good. But take out Frost.
The Reader is good, but yeah. Frost Nixon, like, I don't think anyone's watched that film since it came out, right? Like, so.
Like I said, it has to be memorable.
It has to be memorable.
Actually, why don't we make our predictions for Best Picture?
I think Oppenheimer's going to take it out. I think it is the Oppenheimer sweep. It's what I want to win as well. I mean, it's probably out of these ones, it is my favorite film out of the list. But if I was looking for a little, if there was going to be an upset, I think maybe Poor Things, maybe. But I think this is Oppenheimer's to lose, to be honest.
So this past year, I remember I've been, you know, putting reviews up on Letterboxd for a while now, for 4 years. Yeah. And in 2022, I don't think I had any movies that I rated five stars. I think I did one in 2021.
Wow. Yeah.
Last year, I had three.
Wow. Yeah. It was a good year for movies for you.
The Holdovers, Past Lives, and Poor Things. I gave Oppenheimer 9.5. out of 10. So those three are the ones that when I officially make my top 10, I'm going to have to like bang my head against the wall and go, okay, whichever I see in the stars, I'm going to pick as number one, because I don't know. I just rewatched The Holdover. Like I said, I loved it. I just rewatched Past Lives. My wife, just for her to see it for the first time.
Yeah,
I need to rewatch Poor Things. I know it just came out on Hulu. And I'm going to rewatch Oppenheimer. I bought the Blu-ray, I don't know, in December.
Yeah,
it's still in the package. I still got to
watch it. Mine's still in the packaging, too.
who I think is going to win, obviously, is Oppenheimer, who I would love to see win. I wouldn't mind seeing The Holdovers or Past Lives or even Poor Things win. I mean, I wouldn't be... My heart is Poor Things and Past Lives, but I mean, Poor Things. I think it's just Oppenheimer.
Yeah. I think it's hard to go past it.
I think Oppenheimer. Okay, how about this? How many Oscars do you think Oppenheimer is going to win?
Ooh,
nominated for 13.
So I think based on what we were talking about, the noms, I think it's got picture, director. I think it's got actor. I think it's got supporting actor. I think it's going to take adapted screenplay. That's five there. I think it's going to take score. So that's six. I don't think it'll win sound. I'm going to guess seven. I think it's going to, I'm going to say six. I'm going to say six Oscars. Yeah. Okay. I think it's going to, yeah. That's tough. I got nervous on that one.
I think it's going to sweep all the technical stuff. I'm going to say nine, because I don't know if it's, I know it'll win best supporting and best actor.
Yeah.
I
think where it's going to lose out.
I mean, I'm just assuming it'll win best director and screenplay, but you never know.
But I think where it's going to lose out, where the nominations are things like costume design, hair and makeup, film editing. I don't think it's going to win, and production design. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like some of those real below the line ones that are where I think it might lose some, but you could be on something with that. Yeah.
All right. That's going to be our Oscar talk. So I'm going to thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. This was a lot of fun. This is a special time of year for movie lovers. So it's good to be able to break it down, and I'm glad we got to work out the time, and I hope we can do it again soon, man. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I tried to do a live stream with Kieran, actually. We were doing.
Oh, true.
And then there was a lot of technical issues, and then he had to leave for work. I'm like, all right, maybe we'll try in the future. Or that was before I had a podcast. I said, let's do a IG live. And just watch and just react to the winners. But no, why don't you let everybody know where we can find you on social media, your websites, your podcast.
Sure. Yeah. The best place to find everything, the hub for everything, is on Instagram at Nick's Flicks Fix. You'll see my 60-second reviews or my video reviews there and some interview clips. And then on the link in bio is access to all the podcasts and to NovaStream, where you can see my written reviews and written interviews. And there's some cool stuff. I think it's going to be a pretty big year. The momentum's trucking along at a pretty high speed. So there's some cool stuff coming. So I would appreciate the support. And yeah, thank you again for having me on, Tony, man. This has been good fun.
Yeah, I am excited because it's going to be a really quick edit. This conversation was flowing, so thank you for that.
I'm glad. I know it went a little bit long, so I hope it's not
you're
rough
good.
To edit, man.
No, for those who want to follow my Instagram, just go to Sertone_reviews. I also host another podcast, for those who you guys know already, Dancing_with_Dragons. On IG to follow that. I usually do 2 episodes a month. If you want to send us any questions, you can DM me. But other than that, thank you for listening to this episode of The Real Spotlight. Peace out.